And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
What's up, RBLR Nation? Hope you all having a great day, great week, great evening. Whenever you all are tuning in, this is RBLR Rays. You are not hallucinating. You are in the right place. You just have two new voices, two new co-hosts hosting the show this week. Pat and Zach are on vacation. Maybe you could say they're on the injured list for the week. I don't know. However you want to describe it. They're out. And Carter and Corey, the double C combo, we are in help guide you along and help y'all stay informed with the Rays. So thank y'all for joining us. If you're new or if you're a returner, hit that like and subscribe button if you're interested in keeping up to date with the Rays. But I can't go any further without introducing my co-host and letting him get a chance to yap a little bit since I've been yammering on here. Mr. Corey, how you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. Weather's great in Arkansas for once, actually.
Heck yeah, there you go. You're coming at us from Arkansas. Man, that's cool. We've talked about this for a little bit, but the RSN stuff, man. So you finally bought MLB TV, right? So you can watch the Rays without blacking
out. I can watch what amounts to 4/5 of the game. Because somehow Northwest Arkansas gets the Rangers RSN, the Astros RSN, the Cardinals, and the Royals. So you get blacked out on all four teams.
Ugh.
I don't really know. Some of it makes sense because, like, the Eastern Arkansas, it's all Cardinals fans.
Right.
And I guess we're technically where I'm at in Fayetteville. You're 8.5 hours from Dallas and you're 4 hours from Kansas City. It all kind of makes sense. The Astros are the one that really doesn't make any sense at all. It's more like 11 hours away. And I haven't met an Astros fan, at least when I wear I have a City Connect Royals hat and a Rangers hat. Mm-hmm. And at least when I wear that out, mm-hmm, I at least hear go Royals, go Rangers.
Sure.
When I wear a Rays hat, they look at me funny and they finally come up and say, "Are you actually a Rays fan?" I'm like, "Yeah."
Right. Yeah, I get that a lot. And I live in Tampa. So, you know, that's that's how it be sometimes.
Yeah. And that's just side effect of the fact that a bunch of us are at this point, we're all from like the 90s. And growing up in the Southeast, if you grew up in the Southeast, Chipper Jones was God, King, and Country. So,
right. Yeah. Good old Larry. Yeah.
From DeLand, Florida, man.
Right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, man. From DeLand, man. What a time. What a time. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's an interesting character for sure. I got relatives that are big Braves fans. They're big Larry disciples and Andrew Jones and that whole era of the Braves.
Until I moved back home in 08, and then I was already a Lightning fan and Bucks fan, so it just made sense to be a Rays fan. And also, Evan Longoria was kind of replacing Chipper Jones to me. So
right, yeah, that's the perfect time to be a Rays fan for sure. But anyways, enough of our personal lives. I know y'all showed up for some race stuff, but unfortunately, a little bit of a bad news. Ryan Pepiot, done for the season. It's a bummer. He's been on the shelf for the entire first month of the year, and unfortunately, he is now done for the whole year. They're shutting him down. So it sucks. Another blow to the rotation. Unfortunately, you know, they've been missing Boyle for a little bit, but luckily everyone else has been really, really great. And they've been really covering up for some of these missing folks. And so Ryan Pepiot, unfortunately, done for the season, which is a bummer. Cause I think, when he's healthy, he's actually like a solid pitcher. Corey, when you heard the news, what were your initial reactions? Any thoughts on Pepiot being done for the season? Is this like a huge deal or kind of just a medium deal? Or it's like, the Rays have enough pitching, they'll be fine.
So actually I've only ever bought 3 Rays jerseys. I bought an Evan Longoria jersey way back when. The second one I bought was a Tyler Glasnow jersey, and it's actually the one I'm wearing. I was a big Tyler Glasnow fan. I thought he was a 101. I thought he was the most valuable pitcher on a pitch-per-pitch basis.
Right.
So when Ryan Pepiot was the main return package, I looked into Ryan Pepiot, and I actually really loved I loved his pitch mix and exactly how he orchestrated it. Ryan Pepiot is a high three-quarters pitcher, high three-quarters delivery. Pitchers get a lot of ride of their fastball and also pairs really well, tunnels really well with changeups. And so Ryan does that very effectively, but he's also mixed in a lot of other pitches that have made him valuable. And it is I'd say it's a very significant loss from the standpoint of what Ryan Pepiot is supposed to be on this team. And that is, he's supposed to be a number 3 starter.
Right.
That's a guy that is an above average starter at this point. I can say that he is that at number three. I mean, you're looking at a guy that put together two WAR playing in a minor league baseball park last year.
Right. That's hard
it's hard to actually look at his numbers and be like, oh, it doesn't like, why would you think a lot of value? But when you actually look at a lot of what he did last year, it actually ended up being pretty impressive. So if we go to 2025 as a whole and you look at win probability added, and you're going to hear me say a lot of stats such as this, win probability added, I believe that baseball is beautiful in the sense that we can have so many different ways to measure it and measure player success.
For sure. As well,
win probability added last year, Ryan Pepiot is the 26th most valuable starter in baseball.
Hey, there you go.
Like, it was, and if you actually want to look at it, and this got me to going even more into it, was his clutch factor. Ryan Pepiot is the 15th most clutch starting pitcher last year. And that is kind of a weird thing to say for a guy that, you know, was posting a 3.86 ERA and his FIP was 4.36. But when you look into splits itself and you go down to basically situational, so bases empty, men on base, men in scoring position, his numbers were significantly better if anybody on base. It's hilarious to look at. Empty, bases empty, he's just pitching. You're looking at a 5.06 FIP with a 4.67 xFIP. You put a man on base, you got a 3.33 FIP and a 3.19 xFIP.
Huh.
Men in scoring position, 3.14 FIP and a 2.79 xFIP. You're looking at a pitcher that also improved his strikeout rate significantly as he got more men on base. And
right.
It's just very disheartening for a guy that somehow is putting up a 23.2% K minus BB ratio to be out for a season. And I've torn the labrum in my right hip.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's probably what it is just because of the recovery at this point. Because right. Most of the other hip surgeries, if it's something with your groin, you're out 2 months and you'd probably be back in September. I can't imagine trying to pitch with a torn labrum. You'll get random bouts of instability and just faceplant. I can stand up right now and I might have a pop or a catch and I'll fall to the ground. It's just awkward.
Yeah.
But it's a big loss. And
yeah, it's tough.
Pep was going to be a 2.5-3 WAR guy this year. It's kind of sad to see.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he's still not young, but relatively young. And, you know, you're hoping for a guy like that to be able to capitalize on some good performance to get a decent enough contract. Cause, you know, starting pitchers are getting paid out the wazoo nowadays. And Pepiot could have been one of those guys, you know, if not for the Rays, for another team, but even just for 2026, yeah, it's definitely a significant bummer. That's fascinating about his splits with runners on base and empty. Like, I wonder if that's something the Rays have maybe pitched him. Like, hey man, have you ever thought of just going out of the stretch? You know, like, I wonder if that's something that's been floated or.
I mean, there are some pitchers that are like that. I mean, Drew Rasmussen doesn't have a windup.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's become more of a common thing. I feel like it used to be like, you know, the traditionalist, like, oh, well, everyone has a windup and then you go from the stretch and, you know, only relievers or closers were the guys that were kind of just going from the stretch. But now it seems like there's a lot more, or there's a movement towards starters potentially kind of going just from the stretch as well. So yeah, that's it's fascinating stuff. It's going to be a bummer to not have Ryan Pepiot pitching at all for the Rays this season. Cause like you said, it's pretty good.
As far as like contract going forward, I actually think it helps the Rays as far as bargaining power going forward to a degree. I mean, you're looking at a guy that he's going to come back. And this is, of course, if the Rays actually go back to the old model that we had where you're trying to get one or two starters locked up for a significant period of time, at least on a good contract. I mean, he's going to come back next year at 29 years old. You're looking at two more. You're looking at 2027 and 2028 for control still. There's still value there to trying to keep him in and just try to buy a couple free agent years, because you're buying to 33 at that point if it's a four-year deal. So,
right. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing to monitor. I know they gave Rasmussen that kind of mini extension a few years ago or last year before the season. And, that's been pretty darn good so far. So it would be fascinating to see if they do the same with Pepiot, because Rasmussen had – I mean, shoot, he had three Tommy John surgeries. Like, it was
two full replacements. And I was actually in Oregon. I was actually living in Corvallis, Oregon, when Oregon State won the College World Series back in 2018.
Oh, okay.
And there was a lot of griping about Drew Rasmussen because they were concerned that it was going to be their undoing not having Drew because their starting rotation was one guy. Right. And they thought that Oregon State had really bumbled his whole recovery. And sure. I was ecstatic when the Rays drafted him. I was like, oh, that's cool as all heck. I'm already here. Didn't sign him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's tough, but you know, they traded for him, you know, they got him and so far it's been a pretty darn good deal. Like the Adames for Rasmussen deal was kind of an interesting one at the time, but so far it's played out pretty well. I'd assume the Brewers would feel the same way. It's played out pretty well for them, like kind of a win-win sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Really solid. Pep is done for the season, unfortunately, but in fact, it's actually perfect timing that we're talking about this today because I'm going to the game this afternoon. It's at 6 p.m. Griffin Jacks is going to be starting today, and there have been discussions about stretching him out and sort of letting him become, at the very least, kind of a bulk guy or a starter, whatever you want to call him, be more of a long-term pitcher rather than just the closer or short relief guy, whatever label you want to put on him. And, you know, there's some pros, there's some cons. Corey, I'd love for you to get this conversation started because it's an interesting one. I don't know if there's a good answer. It's, you know, we just got to let it play out, of course, and the Rays are more cutting edge than anyone in baseball with pitchers. So, you know, if they think that he can do it, then who am I to question it? But at the same time, there's definitely some downside here. So what goes into this conversation of stretching Jacks out and having him become a starter, bolt guy, whatever you want to call him?
I mean, a lot of times if you look at a guy that was almost all of those guys have been stretched out at this point. They were starters at the upper levels of minor league baseball. And a lot of times command issues are the grand indicator of if a guy's going to be a starter or if he's going to be a reliever. You hear reliever risk can be two-parted. It can be either they do not throw enough strikes or they have an arm action that is concerning thinking about them throwing 60, 70 pitches in a game. With Griffin Jacks, it was very much command issues. As a starter with the Twins, I think he was probably like one of the least most – I think he was like one of the least most valuable starters if you cap it to 80 innings back in 2021. And his issues weren't as much command. I think it was more pure stuff issues. When you look at stuff as a whole with starters, it's – very difficult to correlate starter stuff to reliever stuff just because of the difference between going max out for 20 pitches compared to 60 pitches, you know. But what concerns me with trying to make Jacks a starter is it's all location, it's all command right now. Every issue he's going through is command, and like the stuff is still intact. I mean, but it's just he's walking too many guys, he's putting too many people on base, and he's getting hit hard. And when he gets hit hard, it seems to go a long way right now.
Right.
There's not many expected numbers I really like. I think XFIP is a pretty good number because it's more about correlating numbers to the expected outcome based on the mean of the player's history, like the actual going back to what is expected out of the player profile. And so as far as a number to be happy about, I mean, an XFIP of 4.53 is not the end of the world, but that's really just adjusting his home run rate and his walk rate a little bit. It's mostly right. Home run rate tied to. It's the fact he's just giving up way too many home runs.
Sure.
But I don't know if it's going to really be a great solution.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely don't blame you because the notion that a reliever who's struggling and is not, like you say, struggling with command, not filling up the strike zone, walking a lot of guys, getting hit hard. The notion that the fix to that would be to let him throw more innings might be kind of counterintuitive because the idea of, oh, well, this guy isn't pitching very well. Let's pitch him more innings. Like, it's like, I definitely get the hesitancy behind that because I don't necessarily disagree. But at the same time, of all the guys, I think, in the Rays bullpen, and I wanted to give a shout out to our own Ben Whitelaw. He kind of came up with this idea at the beginning of the year, really when they traded for him. He was like, oh, well, they might stretch him out. And sure enough, here they go. He does have like three or four pitches that he throws on a relatively consistent basis, like three pitches over 20% usage rate this year. He's kind of ditched that cutter that he was throwing last year. I mean, he was almost ditching it last year too, but it's really the sweeper, change, four seam and sinker. The sweeper, four seam and change being the threes that he uses the most. So it's really interesting. I don't know that it's going to work out. But at this point, like, he's been so bad out of the bullpen, I kind of understand their idea of like trying to switch it up a little bit, trying to give him more of a, maybe this is more of a relaxed role, like, because instead of, you know, high intensity, high leverage moments, you're just coming in as an opener and you're kind of breezing through the first few innings. And I don't know. I definitely could see it going relatively well, but yeah, there is a very real possibility that he is cooked, like as a starter, like he just goes out there and gets kind of slacked. So yeah, I don't know. We'll just have to see. Hopefully today he pitches pretty well. Like, it should be really fun. I feel like the Giants, you know, they're kind of a middling team, so it's not like they're throwing them to the wolves or anything, and it's at home. So there's definitely reasons for hope, but there's also plenty of reasons for pessimism, Corey, like you just kind of spelled out. So we'll see how it plays out, man. It's definitely going to be a storyline to monitor this season, especially because now that Pepio's done, they might need another starter until Joe Boyle returns. But speaking of starters, we were focusing entirely on pitching for the first half of this episode. Shane McClanahan, he's had a couple of really good starts. He cooked last night in the first game of the San Francisco Giants series. He was really excellent on the bump. I think he threw six innings of shutout ball. I think if he gave up a run, it wasn't more than one. But regardless, Shane has pitched very well on the surface. Like, his surface stats have been excellent over the past couple of starts. But what are your thoughts on his return so far? Because there's a lot of concern with, you know, he's missed two seasons now, and it's kind of like you're just kind of white knuckling watching him, because it's like at any given moment he could break. Unfortunately, you kind of feel that way watching any pitcher in Major League Baseball at this point. But that's particularly true of Shane. So what are your thoughts on his return to the mound so far this year?
So in general, I think Shane McClanahan's done a pretty good job. And the simple fact is his changeup is still his probably best pitch, and that hasn't gone away. And he's still very effective as far as getting whiffs and actually moving through a lineup. The only issue I have with Shane McClanahan currently is the fact that we have seen a dip in fastball velocity since his return. So the issue with Shane to begin with was he had a good fastball. It was a good fastball. It wasn't a particularly excellent fastball. Shape wasn't particularly excellent. And we've seen a downgrade in the shape, which is concerning. He used to be getting a lot more ride out of his pitches, as fastball in particular, but now we're starting to see less ride. Also, as a whole, pitchers have really started mastering extension. And what was excellent extension for Shane and Pep to some degree as well is now above average extension. It's not excellent like it used to be. Overall, it's going well. The one thing I will say, last night I got kind of curious and I looked at it. He actually saw an improvement in ride. It was 13 inches of vertical drop opposed to the 14.1 inches that he has been getting as so far in the year. Fastball velocity still sat at the same pace he set for the whole year, which is right at about 95.1 to 96.2. So we could be seeing that his fastball is starting to get a little bit more shape to it. We're starting to get more ride out of it, which this is also a possibility considering the fact that the guy hasn't thrown in 2 years.
Like, right.
As far as outside of those, overall, I feel pretty good about it. Like, I think that Shane McClanahan in his current state is much more closer to like a 3.5 F4 guy if he actually threw 160 innings, not the kind of guy that he was looking like back in 2022, 2021, where right. He could have been like up around 3.5. Yeah. Like, yeah. But this is still a guy that could get down ballot Cy Young votes if he threw 160 innings. It might not be a guy that was actually looking like a possible finalist like he was.
Yeah, and that's tough, man, because, I mean, it's not even – like, you can't even put it on him. Like, it's not – he hasn't been lazy. He hasn't been – you know, it's none of that. It's just, man, the rotten luck, you know, of Major League Baseball with pitchers nowadays. I mean, it's brutal. It's brutal, man. You never want to see it. But it was encouraging – it has been encouraging to see him over the last few starts. It sort of seems like he's been settling in really well. And like you said, that changeup is still – great. It's still outstanding. And the fastball changeup slider is kind of his bread and butter recombination pitches, or his pitch mix rather. So I've been really excited to watch him return, even just for really mostly for sentimental reasons. Like, he's a USF guy. I'm a USF guy, go Bulls. So it's been really fun to see him back in uniform, back on the mound doing his thing. But yeah, there are certain reasons to be a little bit concerned, but I agree. I think he's at least trending in the right direction.
I mean, the important thing to remember with his fastball was it was never his like main pitch.
Right.
His main pitch has always been his changeup. That circle change he throws has always been the most valuable pitch he has.
Sure.
And it was more velocity from the fastball was allowing that changeup to play a lot. Mm-hmm. And the slider was always effective. His curveball's just kind of been the pitch he can throw in. So, like, it's still there. It's all still there. It's just hopefully it just keeps trending in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we'll see how Shane can continue to pitch. They decided to move on from Shane Baz, and they decided to keep Shane McClanahan. And so far, it's working out pretty darn well. But if you're looking to add to your wardrobe, if you're looking at your wardrobe selection, you're thinking, man, this isn't great. I could use a Shane McClanahan in this wardrobe, maybe a 3.5 or 4 war wardrobe. I don't know if that works out. But regardless, go to shop.rbrsports.com. Check us out. We've got some really great Tampa Bay related sports gear. We can fill all your needs because, hey, it's the summertime. You know, if you need some tank tops or some short sleeve shirts because it's getting hot, definitely check us out there. We'd really appreciate it. So now we're getting into the second half of our episode. And I want to just talk about UNF product. Speaking of colleges, University of North Florida, Brian Baker, man, he has been outstanding. You know, they kind of made the not controversial is putting a too fine of a point on it, but it was an interesting deal last year with the Orioles dealing away a draft pick for Brian Baker, like a reliever. Like, they don't really usually trade picks to begin with, but especially not for a reliever. And he wasn't amazing last season. He was a little bit inconsistent. That would be kind of putting a finer point or putting that in a more of a kinder way than probably other people would describe it. But this year he's been nails. He's been outstanding. His stuff has been excellent. He has been like all the, like you look at his Savant page, it's all red. Like if you want to just put it in simple terms, you know, he's not allowing a lot of hard contact. He's getting a lot of chases, a lot of whiffs, which he was last year, but he was giving up a lot of hard contact. And this year it's been really interesting to watch his pitch mix evolve. Like the Rays have kind of stepped in and just been like, hey man, stop throwing the slider, like have it be a show pitch. And he's relied exclusively almost on the fastball and the changeup. And man, that changeup is gross. Like it might be one of the best changeups in the Rays, in the Rays pitching staff. And the Rays have Nick Martinez and a lot of other, like Shane McClanahan. They have a lot of guys that throw some excellent changeups, and Brian Baker right up there. So what have your thoughts been on him, man? Like, he got his 7th save last night. He's kind of their closer, quote unquote, whatever you want to call him. But what's he doing differently to be so much more effective?
Well, I think Brian Baker actually fits in really well as a closer in general. Kind of a guy that can start fresh and just go. Like, I mean, you're looking at a high velo fastball that does actually have phenomenal ride. At this point, we're starting to see he's 10.5 inches of vertical break, which is very good ride for a fastball, especially that fastball coming at you at 97 miles an hour.
Right.
He doesn't have a lot of arm side run, doesn't have a lot of movement to it, but this is the reason this is working out. It's kind of similar to why Pep's profile works so well with his fastball and changeup. Brian Baker is a very high 3/4 delivery. Like, he's coming at you like 55 degrees of arm angle. You're starting to get close to almost an over top delivery that you see at times. And that allows for excellent tunneling with your fastball and changeup. And it also allows for you to generally get exceptional ride out of your fastball. And it's probably why, honestly, his slider doesn't truly work, because a lot of the times those guys don't throw a traditional like downbreaking slider. It's more accustomed to like a gyro slider, in a sense, something that's more like a bullet slider that you can locate.
Right.
But yeah, it's been excellent so far, and it's mostly tied to the fact that I think the Rays have deployed him properly. And as you said, the pitch mix, you just got rid of a pitch that was ineffective in its role as a slider. So I would say at this point, even when you get Uceda and Kleb come back, you're going to just keep Brian Baker in that 9th inning and use Kleb and Uceda and basically fireman roles. Like,
sure,
this is the easiest way to do that. You put them in high leverage situations because you can expect them to go out there, get a strikeout, get a pop out, get a ground ball that ends it. So,
yeah. And that makes things so interesting for the Rays with their bullpen usage. And I think there's been like kind of there was that shift from like, oh, well, no closers, like, you know, by committee type of thing. And the Rays over the past few years, like with Fairbanks, like they kind of used Fairbanks as that kind of traditional closer. There's the guy that came into the 9th inning. So what are your thoughts on like bullpen usage and kind of the evolving, like going from like, oh, well, we have to have a ninth inning closer guy to, oh, well, everyone has to be a fireman and, you know, use them in different. Now the Rays seem to be settling back into this kind of traditional way of doing things. But, you know, it's not even traditional because Brian Baker isn't necessarily a guy that I would think of as their relief ace, if you will. Like I think of Clevinger as being their best reliever. But now that Baker is sort of settling into this closer role, it allows Clevinger to be used more optimally. So what are your thoughts on bullpen usage in general, but specifically for the Rays this season?
So in general, I think the Rays have always utilized their best reliever as their fireman reliever. If you go right, back to the Jason Adams and Pete Fairbanks shoes, sure. Jason Adams was the better reliever. And like, if I look back at the Rays bullpen, I think that I view as the best. 2019 is an outstanding bullpen. And you know who was closing every game the Rays had? That was Emilio Pagan. They had Emilio Pagan on the backside closing every game out. Yeah. But you had a young Diego Castillo.
Yeah. Diego was disgusting.
You had Jose Velarde. Oh, gosh.
Alvarado. Yeah.
You had a series of guys that were able to do that. And, of course, I mean, Pete Fairbanks got in that mix in 2019 too.
Right.
So, as far as traditionally, I think the Rays – that whole era where we saw from Fernando Rodney being gone till 2019, that was more a byproduct of the fact the team was just kind of not really in the position where you were consistently getting saves. Like 2018, you had that 80 and 84 season, which was a lot of fun. Like, 2018, sorry, was the 91 season we didn't make playoffs. 2017 was that 80 win team where you saw Longo get his cycle, but a lot of those years, it was not really an established closer. And also, I feel like the bullpen as a whole wasn't the biggest strength of the team during that run either.
Sure.
But I just think as a whole, bullpen usage, you should have a guy. And there are some people that profile best as closers. They profile best as you have a clean slate to work with. You are the guy going in and doing this. And then there are some guys that enjoy having – everything loaded up on him. And right. I think Garrett Clevinger really thrives in that role. I think Edwin Yucita really thrives in that role too. It's a shame for both of them from the standpoint of, I mean, what's their value when their actual team control ends as a reliever. But I think Major League Baseball has moved away from the fact that saves are the only thing that matters too.
Right. So yeah. Yeah, it's more of a fun, like, fantasy baseball stat at this point than anything else. But, it is interesting how it's kind of evolved because, like, it was so, like, archaic. Like, oh, well, the closer's the closer. He has to only come in the ninth inning, and, like, he has to be your best reliever. And I feel like that was kind of the process because of the stave stat. Like, it kind of – in some ways, it kind of ruined bullpen usage for a while in baseball. And now it's like, oh, yeah, saves don't matter. Like, let's just – use this actually efficiently. And now it's kind of reverted back a little bit, but not in the same way. It's fascinating how that kind of has progressed throughout the years. But yeah, man, Diego Castillo, Jose Alvarado, like having those two guys in the same bullpen when they were at their peak, which like they were in that 2018
years. Nick Anderson was the most valuable reliever from 2019 to 2020, and he didn't have hardly any saves with the Rays. I could add a number, probably seven over the 120 games he played with the Rays.
Right. Yeah, people mostly think of that World Series appearance, unfortunately, with Nick Anderson. But, yeah, he was an insane good
reliever. When his arm was falling off.
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, he was clinging on by a thread. So, the poor guy. But he was nails, man. He was absolutely disgusting. He had that high fastball, and then he had the hammer 12-6 type of curveball. He was filthy. He was disgusting, and he fit right in with, like you said, with the rest of those relievers. Because that was back when Diego Castillo was pumping triple digits too and had the
97-mile-per-hour sinker, and then Jose Alvarado was touching almost 100 with his sinker too.
Yeah, like, it was disgusting. Yeah, it was like, how do you even touch these guys? It was a crazy time for sure. A little bit of reminiscing about the Rays bullpen because we were talking about Brian Baker, who's pretty darn good, but they've had a lot of pretty darn good relievers over the years. Brian Baker, he's been excellent. He had another save last night. Not that really matters, but, you know, he's the closer. So it's been a lot of fun. His fastball changeup, man, it's disgusting. So something to keep an eye on for sure. But speaking of keeping an eye on things, the prospects, man, there have been a lot of really fun performances down in the minor leagues. And Corey, you're a big prospect guy. You know way more than myself. So I want to ask you some kind of questions about some guys that maybe you're high on, maybe guys you're worried about. But we'll start with the positives. Who are some guys that have been really performing well to start the season, guys that you're really excited about in the minor leagues for this Rays system?
So as a whole, as we know, Rays catching position has been kind of a difficult position to fill out over the past, I mean, really existence. If you actually look at like Fangraphs WAR, which actually counts for framing, really Mike Zunino is the only guy that's ever produced a 3 WAR season for the Rays at the catching position. And that was his 2021, which I'm a Florida grad, so go Gators. But
there you go.
It's a difficult position to fill. And the Rays are a team as a philosophy is drafting is taking swings. And I believe taking swings is probably the best way to truly draft if you have a good team. And keep in mind with the Rays, we were drafting in 2019 through 2023 with the concept of kind of having us just a complete superstar in our lineup every day. So the Rays took their swings and it kind of continued on from there, which in the end of the day, if you've got a lot of guys that are everyday starters around that 2 WAR value, the only way you're going to supplant them is by getting value, higher value out of guys. And you're going to try to draft stars truly. And so you'll be aggressive, take high variance guys. And one of those picks that we saw 2 years ago would be Nathan Fleming. Nathan Fleming was a Canadian prospect, first and foremost. Canadian prospects are generally slow burn prospects. The baseball culture is completely different in Canada, even compared to the northeastern states that we hear talk about all the time, cold weather state baseball prospects. But Nathan didn't even grow up in like a high population area. He grew up in Alberta. Like, he learned how to be a catcher off of YouTube videos. But in the limited showcase events he went to, he just flashed really high exit velocities. And so the Rays drafted him. It would have been in the third round back in 2024. And going into 2025, I kind of saw something weird, which was they moved the 18-year-old who had just turned 18 into just A-ball with Charleston. It makes no sense to do that, especially a Canadian guy. And he put up a .229 batting average and only a .336 slug. But in between that was a .393 on base percentage. As an 18-year-old facing guys, college-age pitchers for the most part, you're looking at 20-21-year-old pitchers. And so far into this year, it's just been a fantastic start. He kind of had a little rough spell this start of this recent series. But last night he got two hits, hit a home run, and his WRC plus is sitting about 150. And on base percent on his walk rate is still around 12.3. Strikeout rate's elevated, which has always been a little bit of concern of his at 25.9. But, I mean, he's actually using the raw power that everybody projects for him. And right now his isolated power is 275. Like, he's just hitting the cover off the ball.
Sure.
Outside of that, with Nathan Fleming, we actually have Caden Bodine too, which I'm going to be honest, I can't really view Caden Bodine in a – like true vacuum right now, because he is a 22-year-old in A ball, and there is no value to him being in A ball right now.
Right.
His contact rate is almost 90%. His swing strike rate is 5.5%. The only issue of Caden Bodine, of course, big piece in the Shane Bass trade, is what are you going to do when you have Nathan Fleming, who you view probably in a little bit better of a light as far as a long-term solution due to his ceiling. Right. What are you going to do with that when you have a guy already in A-ball and a guy in high A? You're going to have to either jump Caden Bodine to double A, which I'm not a big fan of jumping prospects. I feel like it messes with progression. Or you aggressively assign Nathan Fleming to double A and possibly watch a 19-year-old go against 24-year-olds, which is also a scary concept.
Yeah, not ideal.
But both of them represent a really stable floor for the catching position going forward. And you're probably looking with Nathan Fleming, if he keeps up what he's doing, it could be late 2027. But likely 2028, 2029 is the most likely outcome just because of how the Rays are with prospects. Caden Bodine would probably be rushed a lot further along, and you could see him in 2027, more likely 2028.
I get you.
Outside of that, we got a lot of guys that are doing extremely well in the lower levels, and a lot of these guys are high variance prospects, and it's really hard to ascertain what their value will be in the long run. But as much as I love Carson Williams, I think Daniel Pierce is also a guy to keep in mind with going forward, because Daniel Pierce is a legit shortstop, just like Carson Williams is.
Right.
It All the actions are very smooth, and he's a guy that at this point probably profiles with at least 3+ tools, kind of like how Carson was, except unlike Carson, who learned how to run in the minor league system, Daniel Pierce can already run. You're looking at 70, I think, on run, and the arm and fielding is all above 62. But he's also a guy that's striking out a lot, but he's 19 in A ball, so like it's kind of hard to view. Contact rate's low at 67.2, but it's just kind of hard with low level guys. We don't have really great hit, like really great data on them. Sure. Theo Gillen's still just smashing.
Yeah.
Like that's still going on. There is some hit tool risk with Theo. There is. But it's just working out really well, which that's an example of the Rays looking at a guy that was a high variance guy because he had torn his labrum in his throwing shoulder. And it's so far, it's really worked out. You're probably looking at a guy that will be in Double A come midseason if he keeps what he's doing in High A.
Right. I did have a question about Gillum. What position do you think he projects best at? Because I know there's been kind of some back and forth about where he plays.
So if he gets promoted to Double A, he will not be the starting center fielder for Double A. That'll be Aiden Smith. Aiden Smith is a legit center fielder.
Like, plus defensively, yeah.
Yeah, plus defensively. He, at this point, I've heard arguments that he's probably the best pure defender in the Rays system, almost. As far as it's him and Carson and Trey Morgan are kind of the three guys that are viewed as those are legit defenders. As far as outfield defense, Aiden is by far the best. And Aiden still is a prospect of note, which I was going to get to later. But Aiden Smith is still a guy. Like, you're looking at a guy that really outperformed every metric you really wanted to as a 24-year-old and a 19-year-old in A-ball, like in 2024. And he's still a guy that, although had an elevated strikeout rate at High A, still was above league average at a 114 WRC plus. Like, there's still value there. And the contact rate is, even though he struggled so much last year, we're still over 70%, which gives you a lot of optimism to a degree. But he's, if you're going to project a long center fielder, Aiden Smith would be a great example of that just because of defensively how good he is, and he's still really tooled up. But Theo would likely settle in left field to me.
That makes sense.
Arm strength isn't 100% there. Shorter throws. I mean, longest throw left field is going to make is from left field to home, but just doesn't have to make that strike from right field to third base, which is the longest throw in baseball pretty much. Yeah. So he's just, I mean, it's an excellent prospect. And, you know, as far as top 100 prospects, a lot of people think you make a top 100 list, you're a guy. No, it's not as simple as that. Most top 100 prospects are just going to be everyday starters.
Right.
And he's a guy that should be an everyday starter, though, like when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you want there, Caleb, we can go into some pitching real quick.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
So the High A, like Bowling Green Hot Rods, actually are a really talented team. They have a lot of guys that are actually – they at least project to be MLB players. Mm-hmm. My personal favorite of the Rays pitching system, in the Rays pitching system, is Trevor Harrison. One, because he's a Lakeland kid. Like, he's born in Newport Richey, like grew up a Rays fan. It's a lot of fun, you know.
There you go, yeah.
And he's just – he's just a unit. Like, you're talking 6'4", 230. Like, it's stable. Like, everything about him, his delivery, it's simple. There's no complexity to it. That is a guy that should be a starter. Might not be an ace, but, I mean, at least will eat innings. And so far in a year, it's been kind of a mixed bag. His big concern after last year was a decrease in strikeout rate. Well, that's gone way up. He's striking out about 28.1% of batters. Walk rate's elevated, but he's a guy to keep note going forward just to see how he stabilizes after the first four starts of the year. I think Santiago Suarez honestly has a chance to maybe run it up all the way to the major leagues this year.
Wow.
Just because of how stable he generally is. He's kind of getting hit around a little bit. He's walking. I mean, this is a shame, but he's got an 8.1% walk rate. I mean, it's just unbelievable for him considering the fact that he's a guy, I think, last year only won three batters like two games last year. Mm-hmm. But he's a very high floor guy, and he should be a major league starter. And if his strikeout rate remains stable, it could be even better. But we're hoping to see a decrease in walk rate. I mean, I will say that as far as projected expected numbers, I don't like expected numbers, but XFIP is right at 3.79. So
there you go.
He's a 21-year-old in AA. Like, he's 3 years younger than his average competition, roughly.
Sure. Right.
But I don't know how much time we got here, Caleb. If you want, we can run through a few more guys that could be possibly up in major leagues and a couple of high variance guys that are low right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the Suarez being a really nice guy that could impact the majors this year. Are there any other prospects that you're looking at that could maybe sneak into the major league team at the end of the season, especially like, you know, if the Rays are in a good spot, like maybe they're like, oh man, this guy's a high impact arm, he could help us right away, or regardless, are there any prospects that could maybe make a good impact in the majors this year?
Well, I will say Suarez is probably on the far end of outcomes with that. He's probably looking at 2027 with Suarez, but I mean, the obvious answer is Brody Hopkins. Brody Hopkins is the obvious answer. Brody Hopkins is kind of disgusting. Everything Brody Hopkins does is very it's just nasty. You're looking at a guy that really didn't start pitching until 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I mean, it was his final year in college that he really actually start pitching. His fastball is going to be up in the high 90s, and in general, it can touch 100. It's got pretty good shape. It's got enough life that you're going to get swings and misses. His changeup and his slider both are kind of usable pitches, but his slider is more of a sweepy slider. It's more what you define as a sweeper. It's got a lot of movement to it. His cutter was the big thing last year. His cutter is what really led to his breakout. And this year it's been kind of a disappointing, but same time, I mean, you're talking about 27 innings in AAA. I mean, he's still 24 years old. He's not old. He's not young, but as far as what he's been doing, he's only been pitching for like 3.5-4 years. I consider that pretty fine.
Right.
It's just walk rate's killing him right now. He cannot locate a ball. I mean, you're looking at a 20% walk rate. That'll get better with time. As far as positionally, Trey Morgan is still a guy. He's hurt right now. He hasn't really gotten a lot of run in AAA this year, but the issue of Trey is just simply, what do you play Trey? He does not provide an upgrade at first base.
Right.
And also, it's hard to profile Trey Morgan to first base. I wish he was a little bit better in left field where you could see him get at-bats, at least in the outfield rotation. But, I mean, Trey Morgan might never be a star in Major League Baseball, but I still don't think Xavier Isaac is a MLB player either.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean,
that was going to be my next question, because he's been tearing the cover off the ball in AA, but there's that huge issue of making contact with the ball.
He's tearing the cover off the ball. He is. I mean, a 373 ISO is just
right.
Holy crap. But
yeah,
he's got a 381 BABIP with a 237 right. average. Right. That is not sustainable. That is no way in heck is that ever sustainable.
For sure.
And I mean, a 50% contact rate, a flat 50% contact rate. And he only swings 37.5% of the time.
Right. Yeah.
You're telling me that you can only hit a ball 50% of the time. And it's an issue that's been there always. And it's an issue, it's a fear I have with Daniel Pierce being right around 70 at A ball, because that's basically right around where Xavier Isaac was.
Right.
And
Daniel Pierce is a great shortstop. Xavier Isaac's a DH.
He got better defensively at first, but it's just
still a first baseman.
It's just impossible to, it's really hard to see value in Xavier Isaac going forward. I think it's everybody, Keith Law, actually, I really respect Keith Law's opinion on draft prospects. And as a whole, if you are looking at Baseball America, Fangraphs, or The Athletic with Keith Law, you're going to get a pretty good view. All those guys have different takes on different players, but generally they're some of the more accurate people. And I still remember Keith Law's assessment of the Rays drafting Xavier Isaac was what the heck are you doing? This is a guy that is so high variance, why would you burn a first round pick on him? And to be honest, it's kind of come true. Like, yeah, but
yeah, it's tough.
You got other guys. I mean, Dom Keegan should be in.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah, I love Dom. He's been tearing it up too in AAA, which is really fun. Like his power numbers are really cool too. But yeah, Xavier Isaac, man, he's someone that like in my head is so cool. And like, I would love for him to work out, but I know realistically, like he's more fun in theory than he is in practice. I think.
And it's actually the fact we got both Dom Keegan brought up and you got Xavier Isaac's actually a great example of both sides of a coin, a guy that swings really hard, doesn't make great contact. A guy that normally would make great contact at lower levels, but has bat speed concerns.
Right.
Both of them struggle at that point to actually get contact. And like Dom Keegan, I still think Dom Keegan will be a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I as hopeful as whenever he was a little bit, when he was 23 in Double A and doing really well? No, it's right. A lot more concern. Like, I mean, he really has struggled with high velocity, consistent high velocity that you see in Triple A. Mm-hmm. And it's shown with the fact that he's striking out around 30%, but
yeah,
he will be up at some point. And really, you're kind of running out of positional players that you could see truly being there. Jacob Milton would be a guy, but Jacob Milton's going to be gone for probably a month and a half.
Yeah, so unfortunately, it's looking like maybe a potentially just another season in AAA to marinate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's looking like pitchers are definitely the more likely outcome for any prospects making an impact this year. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on, keep monitoring. Because, yeah, like you said, the Hot Rods and the River Dogs, man, they're kind of cooking. They've got some real talent down there.
And Montgomery should have one of the more talented rotations in baseball if you had everybody healthy.
Right, yeah.
If TJ Nichols was healthy, TJ Nichols would also be another guy that you could see being up as a reliever this year. I mean, it's hard to say he needs to be made a reliever. It's him and Ty Johnson are kind of the same way.
Sure.
It's hard to say they should be relievers, but like when they're doing so well, but I mean, short arm actions are kind of sketchy to be starters as a whole, but sure.
Yeah. But regardless, it should be fun, and we'll keep y'all in the loop. So definitely stay tuned to our episodes. We really appreciate y'all for tuning in. We're coming towards the end here. Thank you to my wonderful co-host, Corey, for making my job super easy because, man, you know way more about these prospects than I do. So it's been fun listening. Hope the listeners have had as much fun as I have listening to us kind of yammer about Rays baseball. But they're taking on the Giants this weekend, so we'll be back next week. Pat and Zach will be back, I should say, with y'all next week. So you'll have to hear us yapping. but we'll see y'all then. But until then, and as always, raise up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.